What is going on, everybody? And welcome to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell channel, which you should like, subscribe, share right now. I'm telling you, I look at the analytics. I'm seeing, 30, 40% people not subscribed watching. So if you're watching, you better subscribe because I'll find where you're at. Don't think I won't. I'll find where you're at. I'll come to your house. I will help myself to whatever's in your home. Like, don't think that I won't. It's not beyond me. I have these abilities. But I'm just kidding. But anyway, like, subscribe, share, all that good stuff. And I'm sorry, everybody that's tuning in, wanted to tune in to see the Acharya tonight. We had some scheduling issues and stuff like that, but we are going to reschedule, and we will have the Honorable Acharya back here on the Bog up here very, very soon. But it's okay, because tonight we are going to Bog Wiccans and New Agers and all kinds of freaks and weirdos. But anyway, before we get started, like always, I'm going to give a shout-out to my homegirl, Miss Hannah, at traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Stop giving your money to the multinational globalist vampires that hate your guts. They absolutely hate you. They sell you poison. Plastics, synthetics, all kinds of garbage that trashes your hair, trashes your body, trashes your skin. They're literally selling you poison. Like, for real. Everything you pull off the shelf at the supermarket is poison you're putting into your body. Stop giving them your money. Give it to Miss Hannah, who loves you and makes a great, wonderful, organic product that grows from the earth. It's made out of stuff that our ancestors use. So go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com, promo code Dave to get 10% off. You're going to love it. You're absolutely going to love it. So, Mr. Tristan returns. How are we doing, sir?
I'm doing very good tonight, Dave. How about you?
I'm doing okay. It's been a rough week. It's been a little bit wild. So, real quick, by the way, I want to show you guys something. My wife got me a green screen for the holiday, and I can do this now. Wait, that's not it. Hang on. I can do this. Ha ha! Let me know if you guys absolutely hate that, if that's going to give you guys seizures, and I can turn it off. But if not, let's leave it on. I think it looks pretty cool. So anyway, Mr. Tristan, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, tonight we're going to talk about the article I have released publicly that was originally in the Epicist magazine. And it's entitled, On the Need for Theistic Paganism, Doctrine, and Hierarchy, or Against the Murdering Thieving Hordes of Wiccans.
Yeah, it was a big hit, and people can find that article right here in the Epicist magazine. The Epicist is a magazine that we at the Nerd Society put together. It is the first, at least to my knowledge, first magazine of this kind. It features articles by Mr. Tristan, as we're going to talk about tonight, because I think what Mr. Tristan wrote about in this magazine was a real big deal. It was a real big deal, and it was actually kind of a smack in the face for a lot of people that have some pretty goofy beliefs that haven't really been challenged like that before.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, not of the people in the Nerona Society, of course, but some of the people within the wider pagan sphere that we always seem to run into heads with.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get into all that tonight, but just a quick overview. The Epicist, man, this thing rules. This is the black and white version. It's available as like $6, $6.50 or something like that. And there's an article from Mr. Tristan, like I said, we're going to talk about. There's an article from yours truly, Big Dave, Primordial Path, Opening the Gates. A lot of people really like that one. Man, there's quite a few really big. Dr. G has an article in here, The Introduction to Folk Medicine. He's a real doctor, and he's talking real stuff, tells you how the body works, and it's an introduction to the stuff. You got from our boy Mr. Keith from Nerona Society talking about grammar and ancient language. You of course, have What is Epicism by Mr. Pereer. William Reeves, as we had on the other week, This is next level stuff. If you don't have a copy of the Epicist, you're really missing out. This is really, really great stuff. It's under $7. So support the Nerona Society and all our work and all the big brain people that are doing. Get yourself a copy of the Epicist, man. I guarantee you're going to love it, and it's going to it's really going to bring us all up a level. I think this is a big deal of a publication. A lot of us put in a lot of work to get this done. We got another one coming out soon too.
And the main thing here is that it costs almost nothing. It's like $6, something like that. And it's multiple essays, like 8 or 10 of them, academic grade essays about the faith and the religion. Everyone should buy it. Everyone should read it. You will not be disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, I got some, I see some folks in the chat said they got it. The response that I got from it is ridiculous. I've like people send me messages, people I don't even know, like hit me up on Telegram or like message me like the episode is like, this is incredible. This is incredible work. You guys, this is like university level work that you guys are doing. I'm like, yeah, that's what we've been saying. We've been telling you it's what we're doing the whole time, but it's okay. Cause now finally people can hold it and see everything that we're going on, get a taste of everything that's going on in the Nerona Society. And you know, what Ari Akasha is all about, which is, you're in Mr. Kerwin's Institute, which is at ariakasha.com. I didn't put anything in the description of this video, but
I'll share my article and the website here in the chat.
Yeah, but yeah, Ari Akasha is excellent, absolutely excellent, groundbreaking, I would say. What Mr. Tristan and Mr. Kerwin have going on over at Ari Akasha is stuff that universities don't even touch yet. The universities are going to be figuring this stuff out like 10 years from now. This is like really like groundbreaking stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And it's been the work of several years between me, Kerwin, and several others of our friends with expert knowledge in the topic. And it's always rather interesting because we get into it and we find ourselves coming up with solutions or ideas or positions that either experts in the fields have already come across and we didn't even know it yet, or that we strongly disagree with them and we can show you why, or things they've just never even had an idea about before. And it's an entirely original research. So it is exactly what you said. It's almost a groundbreaking work that it can't be duplicated. You can't find it anywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe that we at the Nerona Society are doing similar stuff. And let's dig right into it. Tristan, tell us about your article in here. I mean, the title is absolutely, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, it's pretty hilarious. It was probably my favorite. it's pretty edgy. It's on the need for theistic paganism, doctrine and hierarchy, or against the murderous thieving hordes of Wiccans.
Yeah, and it's in case no one got the historical reference, in the I think the early 1500s, the famous priest Martin Luther, who started Lutheranism, came out with an essay he circulated around the states of Germany called "Against the Murderous Thieving Hordes of Peasants," and it was against the peasant revolt in Germany. And so I've always liked that topic or the title so much, I decided to include it against the Wiccans here.
Wonderful. And we're gonna beat them up tonight. In fact, we're gonna do a little bit more and beat them up. We're gonna bog them. So I'm gonna read the first couple parts of it here. It says, among the modern incarnations of Germanic heathenry is decentralized grassroots structure, which has given rise to innumerable permutations of religious thought and behavior. Some of these have resulted in strong and worthwhile contributions to the folk. Likewise, some of the fruits of this state of affairs has resulted in poisonous and poisoned apples, an overriding net negative effect and harmful influence to the sanctity and coherence of our faith. In the following work, I will address the topic of theism and the reality of ecclesiastical doctrine and the prevalence and Germanic concept of hierarchy itself. This is intended as a guiding measure to help our faith more strongly base itself in the Weltanschauung of our forefathers. I don't even know what that word means, I'm going to be honest with you. Of our forefathers.
It means, it's a German term. Do you refer to the specific worldview of a people, of race?
Oh, really? And of our forefathers, and to abrogate some of the corrupting and pernicious influence that has crept in over the decades. That's a strong intro there.
Yeah, I mean, and it is entirely the case here. I think I make a very strong argument for the need of these three topics, the theism in paganism, that our faith had a doctrine which we could look at, and that it contains a hierarchy. And it's important to note here that these are three things which the modern Wiccans, the neo-pagans, Placentites, these sorts of people always have an issue with.
Yeah.
But it's not something we have to just, you know, shake our heads and say, well, I think it's my opinion that maybe we should have this. We could look into the records and the annals of history and say, no, they definitely have this. This is exactly where it came from.
Yeah. So we're not going to read word for word this whole article because it's a pretty big article and it's pretty all-encompassing, and you have quite a few you have citations in here and stuff. So we're not going to read this word for word, but we're going to do an overview of it tonight, and in your own words, we're going to talk about it. For those of you that want to read the article, Tristan dropped the link, or if you want to have it, you can just go get a copy of the Ephesus magazine over at Amazon, and somebody could drop the link for that if they don't mind. Maybe one of my admins or something like that. But yeah, so you have theism. You have doctrine and hierarchy as like kind of the main points of this article. So why did you choose like those three things to be the pillars of your thesis here?
Well, you know, I chose them mainly because it's the three main figures that the neo-pagan crowd always seems to dispute when we're talking with them. Theism, the basic idea that, you know, the gods exist, that they're real, personal, immanent deities and not the Jungian unconscious, or, you know, just symbols for nature or something of that sort. Doctrine, the notion that our faith had specific things in which it was believed, that we had a dogma, to use a word. It's not a dirty word. We did have a dogma. All religions have dogmas. Yeah. And hierarchy, that our people lived inside of a strict, almost authoritarian sort of social setup in which there were people above them and below them. Which is because the Wiccans and the neo-pagan crowds are basically just a clinical reaction to hierarchy and society in general. It's something they always struggle with because they don't want to be susceptible or accountable to responsibility or anyone else or even themselves.
So let me ask you this before we get started, because I'm sure everybody here is familiar with the term neo-pagan, and we get called neo-pagans, and that's something that really triggers me. What classifies a neo-pagan, and how are they different from us?
Right. I also sometimes get called a neo-pagan. It always triggers me to no end because I completely reject the term.
Yeah.
In my definition here, a neo-pagan is someone who's religious beliefs are syncretic, and they have constructed it in the modern age in order, and it doesn't have any sort of tie back to an original traditional folk belief. For instance, a Wiccan is a type of neo-pagan, because if you go back 1,000 years, no one was worshiping the Lord and the Lady, and they didn't have that little square circle and they're calling the elements. None of that is actually real. None of, you know, it's not found in history. They just made it up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so why do you think that some people call us neo-pagans then? Do you think it's just they don't know what they're talking about, or do you think they have maybe bad intentions? It's like they know that it's a slur that's going to upset us?
Right. Well, I mean, there is that to it. I mean, I think people could fall into two different categories. There's one in which neo-pagan just means you need new pagan, because, of course, there is almost always a disconnected line of continuance. So anyone who is a pagan in the modern day is a neo-pagan, or someone who is engaged in any sort of reconstructionism, they could call a neo-pagan. And then there's the kind of people who deliberately want to, either through ignorance or malice, want to assume that you're, you know, like some sort of Wiccan, you're just making things up. It's, you know, you just invented it on the spot.
Uh-huh.
And, Jlawal said a new age pagan, and that is indeed what I'm talking about. Someone who has all these weird ideas about, you know, crystals and all these things that aren't found in any sort of traditional religious structure.
Yeah. Sacred geometry and like all that like weird stuff.
Well, sacred geometry does actually come up in a certain stance, but it is often taken and ran with by new age sorts.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like if you go to a Dharmic temple or something like that, they're going to have pattern. And, you know, there's Nirvana Society has unearthed quite a few, you know, pieces that we believe have something to do with what one could call sacred geometry. We talk, you know, Mark was on pretty recently talking about the 9-square grid. And, you know, there's plenty of room for what you could call like I guess I just hate using the term sacred geometry because it like because when I think sacred geometry, I think of a girl with a nose ring and she's like, you know what I'm talking about. Like, yeah.
Right. I always imagine it as tied to like the hermetic sorts, like occultists and everything, drawing sigils in the ground, trying to summon succubuses or something.
Yeah. Something that's completely made up. Now, our buddy Sturm in the chat says when he's talking about hierarchy, he said, but the people that ruled over you were your relations and close friends.
Well, that is mostly the case in a Germanic society. Of course, the any Germanic society that goes on for a long enough time is the people who are embedded at the top of the nobles, the Jarl class, are going to be not as closely related to the lowest sorts, you know, like the Bondi or the Karls as other people in the tribe. But they are, if you go back far enough, a similar people or. You know, they have the same origins, basically. They're one people, a race and ethnicity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So now let's take a step back, because we're going to definitely talk about hierarchy. And we've talked about hierarchy before, and it's something we're going to talk about again in the future, because it is such an important topic that needs to be driven home, because these like new age pagans that we're talking about, the neo-pagans, the Wiccans, they're literally, as you describe them, clinical reactionaries. They're nothing more than, you know, I want to be the opposite of what Christianity is. I want to be the opposite of what these people that tell me what to do are. You know what I mean? They just want to be, they just want to be an inversion. You know what I mean? They're just being edgy. You know? So they have this like innate, like the people are like, I'd never kneel. I'd never bow. I bow before nobody. I'm trying to become a god. And like all this like goofy stuff, which isn't found anywhere in any other tradition. Mr. Mark said something a couple days ago that really, really was true. He said, what's so beautiful about our religion is that there's really nothing special about it. It's found in all other Indo-European traditions. It is parallel to all other Indo-European traditions. And what's unique about it is obviously that it's regional and it's obviously ordered a little bit differently. But overall, it's not that much different than, say, you know, Hinduism or, you know, the Roman tradition or the Slavic tradition. Or it's pretty much all the same stuff. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree that all of the Indo-European traditions, or at least the legitimate expressions of them, all have the same fundamental base essence and character to them, because they're describing the exact same thing. They're describing the exact same set of deities. But yeah. But it is it's worth interesting to point out here that you know, like Wiccans, especially in the New Age culture, it stems from the American counterculture, like the hippies and whatnot. And one of the reasons they're so anti-authority and anti-traditional, anti-hierarchy, is because of that hippie ancestry they got through the, you know, their ideology and whatnot. Because the group basically identified itself as opposed to the dominant traditional structures of society. Mm-hmm. And these people are the blood children of those people in 1962 who said, you know, screw it, I'm going to have to do my own thing. I don't care what you guys think.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's pretty much a just a reaction. And in them being reactionary, they've, you know, I think you made a joke recently or something, like somebody made the joke saying, like, with a lot of these people, Odin could come down and tell them something and they would be like, wow, Odin, you're being Christian. And they would,
right?
It's really ridiculous to the extent that these people cling on to this hyper individualism, and they think that they're being edgy and they're revolting, and when in actuality they're just a continuation of the cycle. They're just a continuation of you know the wolf age. There's no difference between them and like their secular counterparts, and they're the same exact thing, except with just slightly, they're just wearing different costumes. And in your article here, you make the case that they're completely wrong. They have no basis in history at all. They're not authentic, and the solution to this is having a doctrine, having a theistic doctrine. So give us a rundown of what this means, and this goes in. This is your part about theism. What this means and what it looks like. And Hubert says in the chat, "Anus worship." Absolutely, these are anus worshippers we're talking about.
Right. Well, if we're going to talk about theism, as I explain in the article, we have to first understand that, what is theism, right? And people have all kinds of different ideas about what it means to be religious. But originally, traditionally, to be a theist, to have faith in theos, is to believe in a god, or in our case, gods. That's where we get the term atheist, is literally someone who is not a theist. So if you're not a theist, if you don't believe the gods are real, then you are an atheist, which is critical to understand, some of the doctrine and the dogma of the religion, that it you do have to understand that the mythic cycles, the everything contained within the religion is meant to be actually believed. It's not some sort of like vague, Aesop table fable that's meant to like teach children right from wrong. It's very different from that.
Yeah. Joe Lee says, why not rebel with Dharma? Dharma is counter to Abrahamism.
Well, it definitely, and I would encourage many people to try Hinduism and at least learn about it. I mean, of course, many of my good friends are Hindus, but I would argue that as Northern Europeans, our most natural and productive avenue to worship the gods is through our own traditional faith in Azatru, or Germanic heathenry, as I would call it.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize they talk about things like dharma and karma and urta and like these really beautiful philosophical principles that they do have in Sanatana Dharma. I know the word Hinduism triggers some practitioners. So we're I'm trying to purge Hinduism from my vocabulary for those people that don't like it. But in Sanatana Dharma, they have these beautiful philosophical principles. So people are like, well, let's just go do that. And they don't realize that we have the same stuff. When we're talking about things like Erlog, when we're talking about weird, when we're talking about these kind of ideas, it's the same stuff, but ordered a little bit differently.
Yeah, and it can be very tempting to go with the, the Dharmic option, because they have an intact structure. They have priests and texts and everything that tells you exactly what you should believe. They have a history of philosophers that have, you could read a book to say this is what Advaita Vedanta means and this is what they believe, and et cetera, et cetera. And that's something we don't really have so much in the Germanic faith as of yet. We need to create that. Though I would argue that many of the classical philosophers of Greece and Rome are themselves pagans from a similar traditional structure as our own. And it's we have to remember that these people, Aristotle was not a Christian. We
Yep.
have to remember this, because
Yeah, absolutely. Plato is not a Christian. In fact, in a recent show, we
though I would note, if you're mentioning Plato here, that the Platonic philosophy is very different from the traditional European one, or the Indo-European one in general. He was actually executed for the crime of impiousness and blasphemy against the gods.
But he certainly wasn't. I would say Plato was a spiritual thinker. Like, in fact, we mentioned before about the Euthyphro dilemma in one of our shows, and that was from a. I mean, would you say that Plato was an atheist, or would you say that he was just a wacky maverick polytheist?
No, I don't think he's an atheist. In fact, what the issue is that he had certain philosophical notions about what godhood must be, and so he sort of rationalized himself into thinking that the traditional religious expression of the gods cannot actually be what the gods are like. And so he didn't believe that any of the myths were true. He just believed they must have been like folk fables. And he also believed in a one god, a true one divine, like a monotheist religion. So as you can see, it's kind of like an it comes from an Indo-European root, but at that time the Greeks had actually lost most of their sense of religiousness. They were in an age of secularism, not quite unlike the ones we are in today, where most people aren't really that religious, and they lost the notion of why they do the things they do. And Plato was trying to rediscover the rules of reality in the universe, and morality and ethics and that sort of thing. And he just kind of came into a very different conclusion.
Yeah. And some of Plato is a little bit wacky, and some of it is really good. And Aristotle, who's clearly a polytheist thinker, is, you know, that's where like all of our Western concepts of morality come from. You know, that he was probably one of the most brilliant men to ever live. Well, hands down, one of the most brilliant men to ever live. And it's like, you know, these guys were polytheist. They at least come from a polytheist culture. You can at least say that about Plato, that his ideas stem from a polytheist culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I shouldn't be misinterpreted as saying that the philosophy of Platonism and his descendants are bad philosophy, because it's not. It's perfectly acceptable and perfectly good philosophy. It's the foundational basis of everyone's philosophy in the Western world. But I'm saying that you can't approach it as being theologically accurate or traditional to the actual Indo-European structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Joe Lee follows up, says, also true Buddhism, Neoplatonism, and Tao Te Ching are all synonymous with Sanatana Dharma. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I would say that I would not include Neoplatonism in that, or I'm not too familiar with the Tao, but I do believe they, in fact, originally came from an Indo-European root, or they have some amount of syncretism there. But Buddhism is definitely a Dharmic faith, just like Asatru is, yes.
So, yeah, so it's like we already have those principles. This is what I try to explain to people that are like, they look at Asatru or, you know, Germanic heathenry or Setianism, and they say, you know, well, what is, we don't have like Dharma and the stuff like, yes, we do. We have all of the same cosmic principles. We have the same, you know, foundation of philosophy. It's just nobody's been talking about it, because we don't have what we're going to talk about right now. We don't have the, we don't have doctrine. We don't have foundational philosophies. What we do now, thanks to, you know, some really great thinkers like Nirvana Society and so on and so forth, Arya Akasha. But for decades now, since the revival, it's been, you know, put to the side for Conan LARP. Nothing against Conan. As you guys know, I'm a huge fan of Robert E. Howard, but there's a lot of like Conan LARP, and that means like hyper individualist, you know, might is right, all that kind of like garbage.
Yeah. You know, when we look back into what a traditional religious structure has, we can look at Catholicism and Orthodoxy and the Christian heritage of Europe. And they have a doctrine. They have the doctors of the church and a theological structure, because they have many, many centuries of really smart people sitting in priesthoods who could just write letters to each other and publish books saying, you know, this is my argument. And they hashed it out amongst themselves. And eventually you come up with a dogma, because this is what's been reasoned out as being correct. What we need to do as a religious structure, we need to get a bunch of smart people together and hash out this is what we believe and why.
Yeah, and you mentioned the word dogma, and that like people, oh my God, no dogma or whatever, dude. You this is what I tell people that are anti-dogma. Your anti-dogma position is a dogma in itself. Yeah,
it's self-refuting.
It's like if you have a like system of beliefs, period, you have a dogma. That's what that is. That's what a dogma is.
And, you know, I think it's part of that clinical hostility to any sort of authority. Because if you have a dogma, then that means they can't just make shit up. They have to believe a certain thing. And they're really not in it for the, you know, like the faith or the piety or the gods. They're kind of in it to be whatever the hell they want it to be. Which really is impious when you really get right down to it. They don't want to sublimate their own desires or their own, you know, they don't want to bow to the gods or the community or other people or anything. They just want to do whatever the hell they want to do.
Yeah.
And that's their reaction to dogmas, because that would mean that they can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. So in theism, I mean, you very succinctly outline what theism is in your article here, but as far as a doctrine, and as far as us having like a foundation, you mentioned we got to get a lot of smart people together and hash this stuff out, and you know, all that stuff. You know, what is that going to look like for us? Is it going to be like how, like you mentioned, how you know, Hindus or the Catholic Church or like all the big religions of the world have their kind of priesthoods, or is it going to look different? What's it going to look like?
Well, I think it's going to look very similar, actually. We have a base structure to start with. We have sacred texts. We have myths and things we can base a foundation of things we know that are true. And after that, it's mostly a matter of philosophy and theological introspection to come up with various arguments about, you know, topics about this is what we believe about this, this is what we believe about this. And during the course of that, you refer back to the sacred texts as a, you know, a supporting citation, what we know about history, what did our ancestors do, all the things we could objectively say or even subjectively say that this is probably the case and we're just going to go with it because that's what we've decided as a people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the only way to go. This whole stuff of not having that, not having an institution, not having a priest class, not having these people that specialize in it, has gotten nowhere, and it will continue to go nowhere. And it's not a Christian thing. It's a big brain thing. It's a big boy thing. It's an adult thing to do. Is when you have things that you really believe in, you start to create a science behind it. And I'm going to go this far. You know, I'm going to say this. I believe that the Sedian movement is going to birth the philosophers of the new age. Like, the amount of stuff that comes out of the brains of the people that are of the Sedian circles and stuff is astounding. And it's like, it's new thought, and it's breathing life into the Eddic tradition, the Germanic tradition. And I really think that the next Nietzsche or the next, you know, who knows, is going to come out of one of our camps. I really, really believe that. Because a lot of the old religions that birthed all of these really tremendous philosophers and stuff, whether you're talking about, you know, like Prabhupada in Hinduism, or you're talking about like St. Thomas Aquinas in Christianity, or you're talking about, you know, whoever else, you know, I'm not really that familiar with Buddhism and stuff, but I know they've had I think we are the next in line. We are the ones that have the most livelihood, the most vitality, and we're on the strongest upswing. And we have guys that are absolutely brilliant coming out with this stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'll be real with you. It's very embarrassing to sit in front of other people from traditionally religious backgrounds and have them look at our stuff and say, well, you know, we don't really have anything like that. You know, so do you have any theology? Well, you know, not really. You know, you can't hand them anything. You can't tell them, you know, this is our great person, XYZ. He did this and this and this. And, you know, it's something we need to, you know, kick ourselves in the butt for and get ourselves started here as a people, as a movement, that, you know, we need to do this. We need to get people learned into philosophy and theology and get them working on this sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to build temples. We need to build schools and universities and all of that stuff, brick and mortar. That's kind of the Nirvana Society's end goal, is to have a brick and mortar, you know, university that ordains priests. It teaches people. And let me give you guys a quick run. Now that we're talking about Nirvana Society and stuff like that, a lot of people think Nirvana Society is just theology. It's not just theology, man. We have so many different we're working on martial arts. We're working on translations. We're working on diets and cooking. And speaking of diets and cooking, Folkish Farmer is going to be here at halftime talking to us about how to roast a duck. And that's going to be coming up in a few minutes.
I was going to bring that up. Our friend Folkish Farmer, his you know, culinary introspection into the recipes of the past and our ancestors is one of the circles of the Nirvana Society. You don't need to be, you know, some Thomas Aquinas to just be a member of the society and contribute.
Yeah, absolutely. Jolie says, "Will the Sedian? I'm assuming they say Sedian. Will Sedianism bring about the next golden age?"
Well, I mean, it is interesting to talk about the cycles of the ages going forward. I tend to agree with my friend Kerwin that we're in the process of a great cycle that contains many smaller cycles within it. So as we are inevitably going towards the wolf age, which is a total destruction of our society and culture and morality in general, there will be rises and falls and golden ages and dark ages between these times. So yes, it's very possible that we could give rise to a sort of a mini golden age.
Yeah, there are cycles within cycles within cycles within cycles. Yeah, we have no idea. We have no idea. And a lot of people, they mistake the wolf age or Ragnarok to be exactly like Armageddon in the Bible or whatever, how it's like the world gets destroyed. That's not how it works. It is a long period of time where we're kind of like in a time of a lull or a time of decay. It's not like, you know, one day the switch flips and then, you know, meteors come down and crash and destroy everything. That's not how it works.
No, it's a very entropic, as you said, a decay, a degradation of culture, morality, religious insight, that sort of thing. And it just progresses until it can't go any further. And then, you know, the actual physical confrontations, the metaphysical confrontations occur to wipe the slate clean, so to speak.
Yeah. My answer to that question is simply yes. I believe that this path will bring the new golden age. And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be doing this. You know, I would still be doing just like pop political content or talking about sports or something to make me money. But instead, I'm here talking about this with Tristan and you know, talking with you guys. And not that that's the only reason. I absolutely love my audience and I love my friends and I love my experience and I love doing this. But the main reason, my main goal of doing this is because I do believe that this will awaken the folk and bring about an era of prosperity, an era of enlightenment that we haven't, I don't believe we've seen in, I don't know, like 1,000 years or something. Yeah, it might not happen in our lifetime, but maybe our kids' lifetime or something. I just want to get as much of this stuff done as possible before it's my time to go on. You know what I mean? So it's like, I believe that this will bring on the golden age. This is going to enlighten people in a way that nothing else can. Nothing else can. What other way besides turning to the gods? You know what I mean, we've been in a state of decay since we turned away from them. There are parents. You know what I mean? Like, can you imagine, like, being somebody thinking about it like this? Like, they're like grandma in the old folks' home, and like we're the only kids coming to visit them. You know what I mean? So it's like we're waking them back up, and they're coming back into our lives, and yeah. And this is we are facing a crisis as a people. As a culture, as a society, as a civilization, this is a severe crisis. We are in a time of great immorality and evil and wickedness and darkness and despair. And, you know, we are in a bad time. You know what I mean? So what other better ally could we have than the gods? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's a part of the... my friend Kerwin was just talking about that there's a passage in the Mahabharata where Arjuna is mentioned that he's talking to, I believe it is Krishna, and he informs him that, you know, because there's going to be a massive war coming, and he sort of compares it to like the Trojan War as a sort of war where all the gods are involved, everyone's going to be killing everyone, just massive bloodshed. And he's telling him that because this is going to happen, it would be beneficial to you if you got the alliance and the benefits of the Most High, the highest ones. And that's very comparable to our situation here, because in an age of such deep moral decline as modernity, the greatest ally we could have is the greatest powers in existence.
Yeah. And man, it's people that don't think it's bleak. It's crazy. It's like, how can you not think that? You know, I just got a text message from one of my kinsmen who I've been friends with for like since we were little kids, and he sent me a text message saying that one guy that we were in like Cub Scouts with overdosed and died. Another guy, he's like the third guy in the past 2 months that I grew up with that overdosed and died. Our generation is dying. You know what I mean, they're sick. They're spiritually sick. So it's like, you know, we're facing this. We're not going to get into all the politics or anything like that. But everybody here in the chat, you guys know the score. You guys know what's going on. And, you know, I'm going back home. You know what I mean? And, you know, we're going back home. And it's time to go back home and ask our true parents to come join us and help us. And, you know, we need their help, man. Like, that's just it. So before we get too far and off topic and stuff like that, we're gonna start talking about hierarchy, and then we're gonna do Folkish Farmer. How's that sound?
Yeah, it sounds great.
So you talk about, I'm going to do the opening paragraph to hierarchy here, because this is pretty strong stuff. The last of the great baleful influences that has infected our faith from the anarchic neo-pagans has to do with the concept of hierarchy. I love that line. I have mused in the past that one of the telltale traits of the neo-pagan is their almost clinical reaction and hostility to the concept of authority, order, and rules, which they shun and shed at a moment's glance. A moment's notice, as may be also gleaned from the above section on doctrine, the Germanic peoples did not believe in any semblance of anarchy or libertine ethics.
Yeah, this is very much the case. We have to remember that our ancestors lived in a caste-based feudal structure in which everyone was subservient to the law as a metaphysical principle, but also as a civil principle. Everyone had someone above them. They had a king, a lord, a military leader, the person who owned a household. Most people in Germanic society lived under a jarl who owned a household, and everyone worked with them in a a communitarian fashion to progress the community. These people didn't believe in, you know, just me out for myself in a libertine sort of anything goes. I'm going to be a hedonist and I don't have to believe in anyone or anything. That's very much not an aspect of the Germanic soul or the essence of our people.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. They had strict social rules. They had laws. They had an order to their society that, every single resource that talks about it, going back all the way to the Teutons. There was always law. There was always order. There was always hierarchy. And it wasn't too much different than what we see in Vedic culture. And Windhammer says our gods are waiting with open arms. 100%. They've always been there. They've always been speaking to us. We just forgot how to listen. We just bought into the lies of the secularists and before them the monotheists. And, you know, we've just been industrialized and castrated and made sick. And, you know, it's time to go home. It's time to go home. Ever since we turned away from them, we've been on downward swing. It's time to go home. You know what I mean? It's time for our true, you know, spiritual philosophy to be the cultural standard that it once was, you know, for thousands of years. You got to think from the time, look, think about the timeline of our faith and our people. Let's talk about our people, the timeline of our people. Like, this is not... This is the time that we have spent away from the gods. The overwhelming majority of our existence we've spent in their embrace. It's time to go home. It's time to go home.
Yeah, absolutely. More true words have never been spoken, really.
So, I believe that. I believe 100%. I don't just believe. I'm trying to work that out of my vocabulary because it's more than I know. I mean, I know. Believe is just kind of like a modern word. I don't know. But so anyway, with doctrine and hierarchy, how can we re-implement authentic hierarchy in modern society without it being LARPy? And how can we do that?
Well, you know, that is a very good question. I'm not sure I have a great answer for you. I would disregard the notion of whether or not you're being LARPy. To understand the concept of, you know, LARP as something, you really have to be wholly concerned with what other people feel about you, what they think. And as a people, we shouldn't be so concerned with that. As long as we're true to our ancestors, true to our legitimate origins and traditions, we shouldn't care what these people happen to think about it, what it looks like. You know, the Amish are people who act very differently and strange compared to modern society, but no one would say that a person who grew up Amish is LARPing, right?
Yeah.
Because it's been part of their tradition for so long, they've raised with it, they do it, it's authentic to their being now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it is very difficult to say how we return to a traditional hierarchic structure because it's, I mean, to be honest, it's completely incompatible with the strictures of a modern liberal democracy. It would require any sort of actual faith community to be almost separated from the modern political structure. You know, go off and buy a bunch of farmland with a bunch of your folk, and mostly live, you know, as far removed from them as possible.
Yeah. Our buddy Roy says, this is our time. We're the heroes in history books yet to be written. Beautiful words, my friend.
Right. And, you know, there's a very good quote by Julius Evola, I believe it was. And he says, the prayers of, or the blood of the heroes are closer to the gods than are the prayers of the faithful and something or another. I can't remember it, but I'm sure it's very popular in M Circle. Someone will be able to look it up and finish it. I got most of it there. But that really goes to show the impression in our culture and all the way going back to Indo-European times, in which the hero is a very central figure, the solar hero especially, in the Indo-European people. It's central to our people, our culture, our, you know, the essence of our character. We are heroes. That is what we do. That's what we venerate. And these people come and create dramatic change when they are needed. We have thousands of tales about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think we hear about? We hear from our buddy Folkish Farmer real quick. See what he's got going on.
Absolutely.
Let's do it. I think he's got some duck for us. For those of you guys, I forgot to put it in the description, but Folkish Farmer is he's head of the Diet Circle. He also works in the Combat Circle over at the Norena Society. He's really, really brilliant guy, really, really awesome guy, good friend of ours, comes on the show. So we're going to do a clip. He made a video for us about making duck. So let's see. It sounds delicious. I love duck. Let's see.
Welcome everyone. Today I'm going to show you guys how to prepare a duck. Now, duck is a very healthy and nutritious fowl. It's very easy to make actually, and once you render out the fat, it's actually a very cheap animal as well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with a little salt and pepper, and this will be to your taste, of course. So I'm going to add a little bit of salt here. And I'm also going to add a little bit of garlic. This is just the outside of it. I've got the oven set right now at 425, and we're going to leave the duck in there for about 15 to 20 minutes. It just went off there. So what I'm going to do with this duck now is I'm going to take the duck itself, and I'm going to place oranges inside of it. This gives it a really nice aromatic smell. It just gives it a really nice overall flavor. Now, unfortunately, my duck I bought in the store, and it does not have the liver and the gizzard and the kidneys and all the good stuff, so I won't be able to make gravy with it. However, still will have a good, nice, good flavor here. Let's put that in here. So once I've got that in there, this is kind of what your duck's going to look like. I'm going to place this into a cast iron. At this point, I'm going to go ahead and take it and put it in the oven. So while the duck cooks down a little bit, like I said, for about 15 minutes, you want it at 425. That's going to allow that skin to crisp up and give it that nice, crispy outer layer. So what about a side dish? So today, I decided to do Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts are one of my favorite, easy to do, very healthy, nutritious side dish. So what I've done, I've already cut up everything here, but essentially what I did is I just split the Brussels sprout in half, just like this. Put it in there. And then I cut the mushrooms a little bit thicker than you typically would cut, because it's going to go in the oven for about 30 minutes. So put that in there. And always in tune with recycling, we have here the bacon grease from this morning's bacon. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to dump my Brussels sprouts, my onions, and my mushrooms directly into this. And I'm going to give it some salt and pepper. Now, I like a lot of salt, so, and a lot of pepper. There we go, and I'm going to add a little bit of garlic powder to this, or excuse me, garlic granules. Put the garlic in there. Now what I'm going to do is I'm just going to kind of mix this around because the bacon grease is kind of solidified a little bit. If you wanted it easier, you could have put it in the oven for a few minutes and let that bacon grease kind of liquefy. But this works just as well. Just make sure to evenly coat everything. Make sure that you've got everything together here. If there's any onions or anything that didn't get well cut like that, you can just kind of break them up. And what we're going to do is we're just going to set this to the side, and we're going to roast the duck for about an hour and a half. So we'll turn the duck down after this 15-minute skin crisping exercise down to 350. And the last 30 minutes while the duck's in there, we'll take and put the Brussels sprouts in there. And then what I like to do with this is I like to take some balsamic vinegar and drizzle the balsamic vinegar over top of the Brussels sprouts. So we'll just go ahead and set this to the side. And I'll see you guys shortly. So what I'm doing here is I'm taking a cheesecloth and I'm putting it over the strainer. And that's going to catch any of the larger chunks. And what will be at the bottom here is pure, wonderful duck fat. Now, some of the great uses for duck fat, you can cook potatoes in it. It gives it a really nice flavor. You can also add this, like a tablespoon or two, to your pie doughs and pie crusts. You can rub this over your chicken, pheasant, quail, pretty much any of those kind of birds instead of butter, and it will enhance the flavor tremendously.
Oh, man, did that look delicious. Holy crap. Man, let me tell you, duck is like one of my favorites, and yeah, I really love how he showed how to like render the duck fat there and how to strain it out and stuff like that. That duck fat, you could do so much stuff with. You could put it on roasted potatoes. You could you take your duck fat and you do like some steak fries in the duck fat off the chain. Dip them in some sour cream. Oh my God, such good. I guess that's not ancestral dipping them. It's doing like folkish loaded fries. I don't know if that's a real thing, but it's certainly delicious. So thank you.
It is now.
Yeah. It is now. It's going into the institution. But many thanks and many blessings to our good friend, the Folkish Farmer. Absolutely brilliant guy. Awesome guy. Look at his setup. Oh, my God. What a pro. Everybody go over there and subscribe. Folkish Farmer. You can find him on YouTube. He's got his own channel now. So, yeah, go give him a shout. He's also uploading onto the Neurona Society YouTube channel. So go subscribe there, too. Really, really good stuff. Speaking of Neurona Society YouTube channel, the next School of Thought video is in the works right now. I know a lot of people really, really love them, me included. So we got another one coming out. So, Tristan, back to the topic here. I think we should give a little bit of an overview of why we kind of make fun of Wiccans so hard and why they're so corny and weird.
Yeah, that's a reasonable thing to go into. For people who aren't super familiar with Wiccans, these are these sort of a quasi-feminist group in which they worship the Lord and the Lady as the two dualistic gods. It was constructed in the early 50s by a guy who joined the Hermetic Order and then left it in order to found his own little cult. And it was basically founded as like a sex cult, right? Like he told like a bunch of women, like, yeah, you should do this and get naked and, you know, do it in front of the sky and shit, right?
Yeah.
And it's like the super like Hollywood style cultic sort of thing. And it just exploded in popularity because people back then didn't, you know, they didn't know that, you know, 1,000 years ago, people didn't believe this stuff. It just wasn't a part of pop culture. Right. Today, we know that, you know, like the Vikings worshipped Odin and Thor and pretty much everyone knows this. Right. Like, but back then they didn't know this sort of thing. And they just believed it. They, you know, lapped it up. And they have all these super goofy beliefs, and some of them are just like invented rituals they pulled out of midair and like syncretized hermetic rituals they've kind of like filed off the serial numbers and ganked. And they have all these weird, like, it's super connected with social social liberalism. You know, like they're super feminist. They have all sorts of very, very liberal policies. You know, it's almost like the white woman's religion to justify, like, you know, like modern woke liberalism. And that's basically what Wiccanism is.
Yeah. And they're mostly obese. Yeah.
Right.
Like you go to like one of their like what are they called, covens or whatever, and like, oh, we're witches. I'm like, I don't see witches everywhere. Yeah. This doesn't look like a witch's coven. This looks like a pig farm.
Right. This is not the Hollywood witch where she's like super sexy and she's gonna seduce you. This is the one that you definitely don't want to get seduced by.
No, because she's gonna crush you with her immense weight. But Patton says, a real witch visits me in my dreams sometimes. I assume this is Freya or one of my female ancestors.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting topic to get into. And actually, I've discussed it in the past with Dave because he has a certain thing we've talked about before in the Halloween episode. But Freya is definitely associated with magic, the, you know, sorcery and that sort of thing. So it could be that, you know, she's a witch in the sense that she uses magic. But there's also trolls, which are actual sorceresses, and they practice malefic magic, black arts, Saether. And these people are definitely not going to be associated with Freya.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and the kind of like they're like, oh, I'm a green witch, or I'm a black witch, or I'm a red witch, or I'm a purple plaid witch, or like what? There's like they just like make up all these different types of witches. But our ancestors were very, very they had laws about what kind of magic was cool and what kind of magic wasn't. And when I say magic, I'm not talking about like Harry Potter type stuff. When I'm talking about magic, I'm talking about using. You know, using the forces of the universe to kind of alter reality or to deceive somebody. And a lot of people now would consider, you know, what we call Saith or black magic. Mr. Tristan, you got some noise in the back. Seems like there's some kids.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're good. You're good. I'm a dad. I understand. But, yeah, so a lot of people kind of think of black magic as like, you know, Magic the Gathering or Dungeons and Dragons or like something like that. But in actuality, what we understand black magic to be is just predatory psychiatry or psychology, I guess you could say. Psychiatry is giving people, you know, Zoloft or whatever. But no, psychology. Like, for example, like predatory marketing or subliminal messaging or operative conditioning. Like, these kinds of things are essentially black magic. Would you agree with that, Mr. Tristan?
I would agree that that sort of it actually in the modern age goes by the term of chaos magic is in fact a specific subschool of magic. But I would disagree that that's all that's contained within Saether or black magic. I do think that we have to, as part of the Germanic tradition, we do have to understand that magic and sorcery is to be considered literally real.
Yeah, hang on a second. I got to bog somebody in the chat here. Okay, so. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, our ancestors didn't like the black magic, the deceptive stuff, because being deceptive, and we're talking about hierarchy here, being deceptive was an unmanly act. It was ergy. You know what I mean? It was not a cool
right.
thing to do.
Our ancestors believed that any time you weren't just meeting the practice head on, you weren't going to legitimately fight someone where they could fight you and you knew you were going to fight them, that this was a form of cowardice and deception, and this was something that was wholly alien to the nature, natural essence and the soul of man. And so it wasn't just you doing something bad that you shouldn't do. They thought that if you do this sort of thing, you must be like alien. You must be ergi, anything, something that's not like other men. You're broken and wrong.
Yeah. Which, yeah, it's still there today. I see these, like, limp-wrist goofballs and stuff like that. I'm like, these guys aren't all there. Like, we see this all throughout modern society, these guys that are just, like, kind of, you know, fanoic or something.
Right. The punishments of Vergelmir will be filled with soy boys with their mouths wide open.
Yeah, that's kind of true. that's really crazy. So going back to Hierarchy, we only have a few minutes left. Actually, we're kind of running over on time. Over on with Hierarchy, let's since we're over on time, let's just do a quick overview. Why do you think it's taken so long to accept these very basic foundational principles like doctrine, like theism, like hierarchy, like devotion, like piety? Like, why did it take so long for us to be like, oh, well, yeah, this was in history. This is how we're supposed to act. This is how all of our cousin religions act. Why did it take so long?
Well, I think it's mostly to do with the heritage the neo-pagan movement has from the, you know, the Wiccans. And they, as I said before in the stream, that they have this sort of opposition to authority, the strictures of society, and, the you know, law, the concept of law and order. And these people identified themselves as, well, everyone who doesn't like that is one of us. And it, since it progressed from them, you know, the movement itself sort of was formed by people who have an innate hostility to that sort of thing. But there is a deeper philosophical aspect to this, especially in the Anglosphere in America and England, and you know, people who speak English mostly, that the political philosophy of the English Enlightenment, like John Locke, the sorts of stuff that come up with liberal democracy, the founding principles of the American governmental systems, all of this kinds of stuff is very deeply modernist. It's not something that our ancestors would have believed in. It's very counter to the traditional order, the old regime of how our people conceptualized of the world and their place within it. And because of this, it's come with a bunch of ingrained virtues that people don't really like to think about or try to, you know, like try to criticize about, you know, like vaunting of freedom or something. Our ancestors didn't believe in freedom in the modern sense that, you know, it's this great thing where you can do whatever you want to do and it's the best thing in the world. Our ancestors didn't even conceive of themselves primarily as individuals. They conceived of themselves as members of a clan, and only within the clan were they people. And that it's been centuries of this sort of Enlightenment philosophy that's given rise to, you know, people, it's just their default state at the present. They don't accept hierarchy. They don't accept the old order, and they're hostile to it because it's, you know, they view it as like oppression.
Yeah. And what I think is really funny is that, they are less free than modern people today are less free than even, you could say, like a medieval peasant in the Dark Age. Modern people, modern people in social democracies, they're like, oh, well, you know, these people back then, they were under so much oppression and stuff. Like, guess what? Those people that lived under a king that you think is such this tyrant had a much better life than you. Okay, maybe not like with medical and like stuff like that, but they pretty much spent most, like they worked for the first half of the day, and then they just hung out and ate food and, you know, gave it to their wife and like went fishing and hunting and hanging out and drinking beer. Like, they had a really free, carefree life and had almost none of the trappings of authoritarian rule upon them, other than they had to pay their taxes. I mean, you today in the modern age, with cameras on you all the time, with all your taxes, all the regulations, all the little communities, your soft, urbanized, industrialized existence is probably the most tyrannical that our people have ever, ever seen. The only freedom you have is this illusion of freedom that comes with, you know, orgasms and boxed wine. That's all your freedom really entails. And if you really think that you are freer than our ancestors, then you are buying into the illusion.
Yeah, and I mean, the modern political structure we have is so repressive because it's meant to deal with a globalized world in which we've just exploded in population. Like, if you go to, you know, like a major city or even some medium cities, you know, have, you know, 30, 40,000 people in them, you can't possibly know all of these people around you, your own neighbors. These are effectively just strangers, and that's not how we're meant to live as people. You know, our ancestors lived in villages and communities surrounded by people that they grew up with, you know, seven generations back, and the Lord's always been their Lord. His great, 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 great grandfather founded the village, and he's the Lord, right?
Yeah.
When you live in that sort of situation, people don't have the same sort of societal problems we do now. You know, people, they don't have rampant murder and rapes and civil disorder and rioting, you know. That's something that comes from the imposition of strangers and multiculturalism and all that sort of modern political stuff.
Yeah. Mara Arian says, you cannot hunt on the king's land. That is his game, not so free. Man, that's just one thing. Look at all the things that you are not allowed to do. You are not allowed to drive a certain speed. If you don't pay your taxes, the government will come and take your land from you. Yeah, you're not allowed to not work at some punk job. You're not allowed to not pay your federal taxes. You're not allowed to do anything, really, outside of work within the cattle chute of the machine.
I mean, it's worth noting that we're also not allowed to hunt on the king's land. I mean, you can't just go out into the forest and shoot whatever you want. I mean, if everyone did that, yeah, all of the game everywhere would be depopulated. It's not because they didn't have these rules because they were petty tyrants. They have them because it makes sense from an ecological standpoint. We need, you know, deer and pigs and stuff to be in the wild so that we have them a generation from now.
Yeah. So, that's a good point. Yeah, we're still not allowed to hunt on the king's land. So that never changed. So we have way less stuff. And a lot of people, they see like the Hollywood depiction of medieval or Bronze Age, Iron Age peoples, and they think that they were just living in filth, wallowing in filth, eating slop and stuff like. I just watched a guy that's a historian that specializes in the Middle Ages, and this is during the Dark Ages. They had a much better diet than we do. They had more access to fresh foods. They had more access to pretty much everything. They were eating salmon on the regular. They were like drinking beer, eating fresh vegetables. Their diet was better than us in the Dark Ages.
Well, right. Now, the diet of a peasant, we pay premium prices for it. You can buy it at Whole Foods. We call it organic.
Yeah. Yeah. That is such a good point. That's so true. Oh, man. That's so terrible. What a fleecing we've taken. You know what I mean? What a scam this is, modern society. They tell us how wonderful it is and how free we are and how great this. And it's just, it's nothing but a freaking scam. Like,
this goes back to the Enclosure Acts, which was passed by the British Parliament in the 1800s. And it's always something I love to bring up to people because they passed it so that they could take all the commons away from the peasants and force them into cities. Because when the industrial age was coming around and they needed the peasants for the factories, the farmers just refused to move to the cities. Like, they said, fuck you, we're fine with, we have our pigs and our goats and our chickens and we eat whatever we want and we don't need your factories and your money. So they literally passed a law to take all the land from the farmers and force them to go find work in the cities.
That's a shame. I don't know. That's... What a industrialization. We're going to do a whole show on industrialization up here pretty soon. And I know you're not. Actually, we got our boy Angriff coming on up here pretty soon, next couple weeks, to do his return. He wants to talk about technology and Nietzsche. So I know you're a big Nietzsche fan. He is too. So that should be a really good show. But we're going to do a whole darn show talking about the effects of industrialization and technology and like all. We're going to get into all that. And I have some pretty wild theories and stuff that I like to get into. But we are way over time. We're 10 minutes over time. So, Mr. Tristan, do you have anything in conclusion for us?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered pretty much everything we needed to here. I would encourage everyone, I'll post the link here to my article and go to RDA Akasha, our website here, and read it. Tell me what you think. Comment, comment on our, like and subscribe on our Facebook page and give us your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Have you guys ever have, I know people send me messages and some stuff like that. Help me out with the YouTube algorithm. If you ever have an idea for a show that you would like us to do or answer a question or something, don't be afraid to leave it in the comments, man. I read pretty much everybody's comments. I don't have enough time to get to reply to all of them, But I'll give you a little. I'll give you a little like to let you know that I see you and I can read you and stuff like that. Or you can reach out to us on Telegram. We have some chats and stuff on Telegram that people can get into and get in, talk and socialize with the various communities of Sedians and also True and stuff like that. And make sure to go subscribe to Nerona Society's YouTube channel and subscribe to the Folkish Farmer and get yourself a copy of the Epicist magazine, man. I'm telling you, it's under $7 with shipping and everything. You know, we got Mike says, excellent, Roy. I have been absent for some time. I forgot how much I enjoyed Dave Martell and Tristan. Thank you very much, Brother Mike. Thank you so much.
Right. Sruyan here says, what happened to the Akalia G? It is very unfortunate. We had some scheduling issues that, you know, it was totally our fault. It's not him. We ended up having to reschedule it with him. So we'll just do the interview with him at some later point in time. But it's not close or anything. We're definitely going to get him back on, and it'll just be, you know, in a few weeks or something.
Yeah, yeah. And Tristan says us because he's being nice. It was my fault. I ruined. Dave dropped the ball. I'm sorry.
Pretty much right. I didn't want to say like no. It's all Dave's fault. Fuck him.
It's all Dave's fault. It's all right. But Mr. Acharya, the Acharya, will be on very soon in the next couple weeks and or whenever we can schedule something. I know he's a very busy guy, and rightly so. But, yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. I can't wait to get him on and talk to him and stuff like that. And I know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, have you ever looked into it? The man has a master's degree and a PhD in totally different subjects, on top of being an Acharya and a priest and everything with his sect.
That's... He's a genius. That guy, he's absolutely a genius. We're not associated or partnered with him at all. I implore everybody, even Asa True folks, go subscribe to his YouTube channel. The man is absolutely brilliant. His philosophies and stuff, he's tremendous. Just tremendous. He's one of the greatest spiritual teachers of our time. I would comfortably say that. But anyway, we are going to shut it down for this evening. So much thanks and many blessings to all you guys, man. I got so much love for all you guys. I appreciate all your support, all the kind words, and you know, everything, man. Much love to you guys as we go on this journey and we travel on this road together and we heal together and we learn together and we become enlightened together. It's just a wonderful experience. I appreciate each and every one of you. Many blessings to you and all of your wonderful, beautiful families. Make sure to go to Amazon.com, pick up a copy of the Epicist magazine. Like I said, under $7. You guys, this goes right into the coffers of Nerona Society so we can fund projects and do stuff like that. It doesn't go into anybody's pockets. It's all funding the cause. All funding the cause. But like always, man, like, subscribe, share. Yo, we got more coming, man. You click the alert bell so you get alert every time we go live every single Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern here on the Bog. We got much more good stuff coming. The Acharya is coming on, man. We got Angriff's coming back. We got a bunch of shows lined up. They're going to be really, really good. You guys are going to love them. But like always, shout out to my homegirl, Miss Hannah, traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Stop giving your money to the multinational globalist vampires that hate your guts. Give your money to somebody that loves you, that makes good organic products that grow from the earth. Good for your hair, good for your body, good for your skin. It's good for you, man. I use the beard oil. We use the lotion. We use all the stuff. I mean, I love it. My wife loves it. My mom loves it. Dr. G, Folkish Farmer. Everybody loves it. It's great stuff. TraditionalApothecary.BigCartel.com. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. I will see you guys next week. Much love. Hail. And see you then.